Blog Talk Radio.
Going red in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet was that easy. Emotional development, relationships, experiences, environment, and genetics all take a hand in molding the person and poet we are today. Welcome to Double Helix, where we examine the X's and the Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. Get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is the poetry that we are made of. This is a Double Helix on Late Night Poets, Blog Talk Radio. Late Night Poets is a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can chat with us in the chat, and you can read the poems as we do to get the most out of it. I'm Aphasiana, and with me I have my co-host, Daniel Deschino. Hi, Dan.
Hey there. What is happening?
Well, I'm excited to do this second half of your contest. Can you give our listeners a little refresher in case they weren't here last time?
Sure. This is the art of Ella Rose. Ella is a Rhode Island-based, in the USA, Rhode Island-based artist. She does it full-time. She's a professional artist, and she does shows all over the New England area, and I think she's, I'm not sure if she's branching out of the places. I know she's been down in D.C. before as well, too. You can see her if you're in the area. She's doing shows pretty much every week. You can also check her out on Ice Cubes and Dragonfire, so search for that. I believe it's icecubesanddragonfire.com is her website, but she's really an amazing artist that specializes in women's strength and in medieval type art. I met her at a show, and we just kind of started talking, and I thought she'd be a really good fit. And she came on last time, Unfortunately, she was unable to join. She was planning on joining tonight for the second half. She was unable to join. So, you know, she sends her regrets, but she's excited to hear the show, I'm sure. Again, check her out on icecubesanddragonfire.com for all of her great work that you can purchase or even just look at. Yeah, so these are the carryovers from that last show. So, yeah, I'm excited to get into it.
Me too. So last show we did prompt 1, 2, and part of 3. We're continuing with prompt 3, which is a mostly black and white image of a girl and a whole bunch of heads or perhaps people all around her that look a lot like her, with some gold kind of filigree that is across her, like possibly a necklace, some chains that go around her. It's a very somber-looking piece, except for that piece of brightness. So we've gotten all kinds of responses to it. And the first one we're going to read today is by Tyler Jakeway. It's called The Dark Face from Within. More aware as we get older, knowledge as vast as the rings of Saturn, I see buildings begin to smolder. The ruins expand and form a familiar pattern, seeing stars all throughout the night. The sun shows the dawn is near. Its glow mixes with the morning twilight, a tranquil relief from the fear. All negative energy is temporarily purged. Worry cast and set aside for the moment, this pleasure is just fleeting. A stranger who is all too familiar, as hard to see as when weather is sleeting, a faceless silhouette hiding behind a stone pillar. This is the farthest from a stranger. The faceless form looks similar. It's a part of me, absent of anger. Deepest change inside the cellular. Advancement of this molecular level, the stoic side of souls that are fragile, held together by the glue of the devil. The figure adopts traits of a cat, becoming so agile, landing every time on our feet, slipping into shadows instead of facing any kind of defeat. As soon as their guard is dropped, any sense of armor flaws, admitting the chaos and suffering never once stopped, even though the toughest and most resilient will be swiped by life's claws. End poem.
Excellent, excellent read. And, yeah, there was a lot of really interesting, you know, philosophy on here, I think. What was that line? Oh, a stranger who is all too familiar is hard to see when the weather is sleeting. And I really liked, which I think you might comment on too, is the cat. She's talking about the cat. I can't find where it is. I'm having trouble seeing tonight. But, you know, I'm almost going through the same thing lately. I got crazy fears and negative anxiety and energy going on, and it's almost like a different part of you. You know, you have all these different things that go on in your life, and I've written before about I wish I didn't know things I did. I wish I was ignorant. You know, the worries and the things that go through my mind. I'm a forward thinker. So if you tell me if you tell me about something we're going to do, I've already thought in 5 seconds of, you know, 55 different ways to do it and what could happen, both positive and negative, and what we have to do and all these things. It just goes through my mind, like, constantly. I'm always, like, 12 steps ahead. My boss gets mad at me because she's usually working on right now, and I'm like, well, but 5 years from now, we're going to be... She's like, all right, wait a minute, you're already 5 years ahead. And that's kind of what this, in a way, at least what it was saying to me, is... that there's these different, and it goes with the picture, not really different personalities, but just different parts of you, different thoughts, you know. There's the part of me that doesn't really care. There's a part of me that wants to just kind of do something, but then there's that part of me that kind of sticks out that worries about things that's kind of gnawing at you sometimes. So yeah, this is really good, Tyler, and enjoyable. Viziana.
I really enjoyed that it was a little bit different perspective, because often when you talk about that shadow person beside you, it's your dark side that's there. It is that part that is the fear, that is the anger that you're forced to face. But in this one, the main point of view is the one who is afraid and angry. And this figure beside them has relief from fear. It says, it is a part of me absent of anger. This is the peaceful version that is being encountered. And that's not usually the way it goes in something like this. But I thought it was a really interesting perspective of when you are the stressed out version and you see this peaceful version of yourself, and it's like what you could be, what is the potential of grasping. I thought that was really a cool way of looking at it, because it's a similar deal where there's the different aspects of you and how they are feeling. But I really liked the idea of viewing that tranquil version of yourself and seeing it. I liked that it's like that faceless form is familiar. It's the farthest from a stranger. And I also found it really interesting. The stoic side of souls that are fragile, held together by the glue of the devil. That is interesting. The devil piecing you together. So that part of you that is not afraid and not anger was put together by the devil, who you would think would create the fear and the anger. That was just fascinating to me, that it was the devil who glued together the fragile version and made it okay. I also liked the kind of the cat, and I liked that it combined the beings, because landing every time on our feet, so it's my feet because it's themselves, but it's our feet because it's like the different versions are all landing on their feet, but they are admitting that they are one. They are it's shared feet. That was an interesting choice to make it our feet. And that last line, and most resilient will be swiped by life's claws. So not only are the figures, the narrator, cat-like in being able to land on their feet and being resilient, but life itself is a lot like the cat and swiping those claws, and you have to be prepared because the cats can be very gentle and kind, or they can be quite aggressive. So it depends on how you're taking it. This is a very layered piece, and it had some great creative ways of expressing itself. So thank you, Tyler. This was a wonderful contribution.
Excellent, excellent. Yes, absolutely. Sorry, I am here. So what do you want to do now?
We have another one by Silver Spark. I know you're having trouble seeing. Do you want to read, or do you want me to read and you comment?
No, I get it. Okay. So, Silver Spark, Sea of Despair. I walk with no goal. I talk with no soul to this life of foul. I can feel it no more. I've drowned in the sea of darkness. I've lost in the sea of madness. My eyes are now blind, but will is not my bind. I have struggle in this dark sea. I have wonder in this dark sea. Before my life, I will not stop for a solace. I will destroy those who block my pace. I will peel all my slough for my will to get tough. cuffed. We'll cross seas with my bare hands. We'll tear seas with my bare hands. To the sea of plight, I will burn it with my bare hands. I will bright it with my bare hands. To this world of light, I will change it with my blind eyes. I will see it with my blind eyes. To this world of life, I will deal it till I die. I will make it till I die. As you can say, I will walk to my goal to never bind. I will fix my soul to never get blind. End poem.
Thank you, Daniel. I thought this was interesting how it used the rhyming, because not only does it have end rhyme that is well done, it also has some internal rhyme. I walk with no goal, I talk with no soul. So the second word in the lines rhymes, and that is most obvious when you're looking at it. But there's rhymes like that that are within that just add that extra little bit of a flow to it. There's also a lot of repetition, and I think that this is an intentional style. It makes it almost like a mantra. I will not stop. I will destroy. I will peel. I will burn. I will bright. The I will makes it like a vow, to have it repeated so much. This is a mission statement in a way, that determination of what will be done, and that willingness to overcome what is happening. Willingness and the repetition of will as an accident, but it actually, it fits. So I think that this shows strength, and that's what they're working at here. It says in the AN, for me, the image is a woman drowned in a sea of despair, and she is struggling to overcome it. And I feel like she's winning the struggle within this poem. It's a struggle, but it's one that is going to be handled. What did you think, Dan?
Absolutely, and what I liked about this is different than all the other ones that kind of was on, I don't know if I want to say the negative side, but, you know, the a little bit of more of the negative side, but the last one, and this one especially, is much more just positive. So Sea of Despair, but you're right, this is like a mantra, like a, you know, this person is surrounded by all this despair, but she sees strength in that person. I don't know why, but it's maybe because of the picture too. There's a movie called, I think it was What Lies Beneath, and I'm totally say it wrong. It's with Robin Williams, where his wife dies and he ends up going down to hell. He goes in these pictures. These pictures come alive. I think I might be saying the word wrong. There's also a very obscure book called Inferno, which is by Larry Niven, which is a takeoff of Dante's Inferno, where this guy is trapped in hell, basically, and has to go through Dante's Inferno to get out. So it's this huge adversity. He literally has to walk through hell to survive, and it's that determination. And you know, I'm all over the place here. I'm also laughing because I'm a little overtired, so I'm kind of giddy. It also reminds me of sports, believe it or not, which we don't bring up a lot of sports on here. But I was just talking to somebody about sports around here, and to me, there's a big difference between ego and a confidence, you know. And this is that I'm going to do this. It's not an ego. It's like nobody can touch me. This is just I'm going to do this. My mind is set on it. I'm not giving up. And you know, I think she really did she did a great job being able to come across like that. Like you said, this is almost like an affirmation that you would say before you're going to do something that's hard. So lots of references all over the place, guys. Sorry, but that's what came to mind.
I think that works well. Yeah, I agree. Affirmation is a word that I was looking for. So thank you. I think that is right on there, the affirmation.
It always makes me happy when I think of a word that a librarian didn't think of. So that made my night.
Well, it's, you know, it's where my mind was trying to go, but it just wasn't quite there. So thank you. Got it off the tip of my brain.
I gotcha. No worries. we're two poems in, and I already forgot where we are. But you think it's your turn, right? Volcanic comment.
It is, yes.
All right.
So now we're going to read Masked Echoes by Volcanic Comet. And this, here we go. In shadows cast, a girl unknown, bearer of a mask not her own. A million faces grace her facade, concealing a void, an essence flawed. A chameleon of human guise, hiding truths within her eyes. She adorns each borrowed face, a charade, a sorrowed embrace. Yet, deep within, an emptiness looms, echoing through her silent rooms. A yearning for a visage true, a soul untamed, a heart askew. Lost in a maze of countless veils, her essence a phantom forever ails. Longing for the dawn of self-discovery to unveil her truth, break the chivalry. In this masquerade, a relentless quest to find the face that suits her best. A journey through the labyrinth of years, seeking solace amid concealed fears. End poem.
That was a great read. And, I don't know if I've commented on this before, but I've heard people, nobody on this website, but I've heard people talk before about poetry and how rhyming poetry is not true because you can't say exactly what you want to say because you're, shackled by the rhyme, and I couldn't disagree more. I think it's just harder to do, and I thought that the rhyming on this is great. You definitely can say what you want to say with writers. I just think that's a bad statement. There's lots of different ways of writing poetry, and you want to use the right tool for the right expression. So anyway, I thought that was great here, and what I liked is I gotta find it again. Deep, I like the line, deep within an emptiness looms. So she kind of talks about the borrowed, the charade, the sorrowed embrace, an essence flawed and all this. But it's a very interesting idea of, so the bad parts of you, the demons, the sadness, all those things, they're part of you, right? So if they disappeared for some reason, would you feel a little bit of emptiness because part of you really isn't there? That's part of who you are, even if it's a bad part. So that's very interesting when those things disappear from her. There's an emptiness, right, echoing through her silent room. So a part of her where some of these demons or some of these ghouls sit is now empty and echoing in a lonely room, right? It's a lonely part of you. That's interesting. And I can think of times when I, parts of me that I've fixed that, not that you necessarily miss it, but it is a part of you that's just kind of not a part of you anymore, right? So I really like that line. That's the line that struck me. Very interesting. And Faziana, before I... For everybody in the empty part of it, this is the listeners. I'll let you talk.
You're never boring. All right. So I thought this was great. It was a great use of rhyme where it didn't make it feel silly. Sometimes rhymes can make it a little bit lighter, which can be good. But this is a serious piece, and it stayed serious. The rhyme wasn't forced. I like the idea of trying to find yourself by trying on all the masks, because it's not that she's hiding her true self, if she's trying to figure out which one is real. The bearer of these masks, putting them all on, concealing a void. So she feels like she's blank and empty, and she's trying to figure out which one fits. I really like the use of chameleon as an example here, a chameleon of human guise. She's hiding the truth, but it's not really hiding anything in particular. It's hiding the emptiness. So she adorns these borrowed faces, and this kind of makes me think of when you're a teenager or young adult and you're trying to figure out who you are. So sometimes you go through phases of, like, I'm going to try being goth. I'm going to try being, like, a hippie. I'm going to try being, I can't think of things like, I was totally a geek, but you don't really try that usually. It's just how you are. try the preppy kind of jock feel, appeal, and just trying to know which one fits. And it's not necessarily being fake. It's just you put on these identities trying to figure out where you fit in the world. And when you're young, often that is the time where you get the opportunity to try things out. And sometimes the changes in your life let you do that. So, like, when you move from elementary school to high school, or when you go from high school to college or university or the workforce, you kind of get a chance to start over and try on a new version of yourself and see how that fits. And that was my impression here. It was not so much wearing a mask to pretend to be something that you're not, but to try to figure out who you are. A yearning for a visage true, a soul untamed, a heart askew, looking for what is real, and feeling lost within all of those veils, knowing that nothing's quite who you want to be, and the forever ails, it's like it's a constant battle to try to find yourself. At the end, it's the labyrinth of years. So sometimes we don't find it when we're young. Sometimes we're still figuring things out when we're older. And, you know, that's okay. There's so much kind of pressure to know who you are early on. And for a lot of people, that's not actually the case. So I like that this explored how identity shifts and you're still trying to find yourself later in life. And I mean, identity is basically the theme of Double Helix. So I love how much this fits within the concept of our show.
You said so many interesting things. First of all, I agree with rhyming. It's I try to rhyme. I'm not good at it. Every time I rhyme, it sounds like Dr. Seuss. No matter how serious I'm trying to be, it's just that, and when I'm reading it, it just reminds me. So it is a hard thing to do, the style that you did. Finding yourself is an interesting. You know, I'm in my 50s and I'm still kind of the same person I was when I was 10, but I'm also much changed. I've also found kind of a different niche, and I don't know, it's just because I'm older and changing, but. This one, you know how these weird little kind of stupid things stick in your mind sometimes. There was this girl I worked with who was huge into the band Fish. She wore tie-dye shirts all the time. She was like a Grateful Dead fan, but she was kind of, it was after Jerry died, so she was more kind of Fish. And like I said, she would just go to see all their shows, and she was just this kind of, you know, earthy, crunchy, deadhead person. And then all of a sudden, she turned into a parrot head. Instead of following Jimmy Buffett, and like was wearing different clothes. It was like all of a sudden, it was like all of a sudden one week she turned around and she was this, and it was just very strange. It was the opposite to me of those two cultures, you know. Fish is very musical. They I don't know if anybody knows the band, but they'll jam for 20 minutes on some song, you know what I mean? Whereas is Jimmy Buffett's very, very hit oriented, you know, 3-minute songs, very catchy, not complicated, and it's very, you know, almost kind of yuppie-like, you know, yuppies like, I sound like I'm ragging on people, I'm not, with these derogatory terms, you know, just, you know, business people that are kind of letting her hair down for a little bit. It's just very strange when she all of a sudden turned around. And that's what I always thought was not that she, you know, that not necessarily finding new things, but trying to find out where she fits in the world. But for some reason, she didn't feel like she fit in that other place, you know. I actually just wrote a poem just about that, about puzzle pieces, where I feel like that a lot, where I go to places and then after a while, I don't fit anymore and I got to go somewhere else. But, sorry, that was commentary on your commentary. So unless you want to do commentary on my commentary on your commentary, we will move on to the next one.
I like commentary on commentary. Conversation is key. I like it.
Yes.
Alrighty. So we are on to prompt 4 now, which is an image that looks a lot like a dragon. And on the dragon, it's like a forest. The back of the dragon, where there are scales, it's trees and mushrooms and plants. It's like a whole ecosystem on top of this dragon. Which just makes me think of my little nephew, because anytime you try to do anything in, like, a forest environment, like, I went to sit on a little stump, and he said, "Auntie, there is an ecosystem."
You're destroying all these microbes.
Right? He was 4, and he was so horrified that I might smush some kind of bug that was essential to the forest. So worried that, like, and I'm like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "Well, there's creatures who live there." he was so horrified that I would sit. So it was very sweet. And when I look at this dragon, I think of that. Like, you would go to pet it, and he would be horrified that you might smush something. going to be a little environmentalist, I think. This is Snapdragon Flames by Captain Kerr. Actually, it is your turn to read. I was going to steal it from you. It's your turn.
And I've been doing a lot of self-deprecating humor tonight. I'm going to do it some more, because this picture is one of the ones that I saw of hers that I thought this would be great for prompts, just with the ecosystem, and then there's another one beforehand that nobody wrote for. That was the other one I thought was going to be good, and this one only one person wrote for it. So again, shows what I know, whereas the ones that the artist herself picked were the ones that had the most done. But I like this picture a lot. Reminds me of Tolkien almost. And anybody who's looking on, if you look at it, it almost reminds me of a Tolkien dragon, the way she drew it on some of the pictures I've seen him draw. Anyway, it's called Snapdragon Flames. Snapdragon Flames, fire's fantastic. Mushroom-capped ridges, forestry flare. Green melting ice ponds only wicks, candles of maple surrounding my lair. Miltonic scenes, mountainous snooze. Shakespeare tendered parabolic breeze, long in the nose snuffing, suffering muse. Drinking from fragons wide as a stream. Resting in shadows, pearl-toothed and sharp, coiling crafty, slender and strong. Jawbones are wired, strung like a harp, gripping sopranos, crushing a song. Eye toward the wetlands, bulrush and duckweed. Eye toward the prairie, prowling wolfsbane. Fields of raw barley, sorghum and wheat. Strawberry meadows drive me insane. Ice crystal fountains, winging a sip. Smoldering kisses, Arcadian puns. My tail sweeps behind me, cracks like a whip, powered by solar rays of the sun. Knights in white armor lance to the hill. Ashen gray horses stand by their side. Princesses lying on tapestry quilts. Sneak out to see me and hitch a cool ride. End poem.
I thought this was a really fun mix of kind of like archaic imagery, but also like fun modern language. Like, hitch a cool ride is definitely not like, you know, medieval myth that you might. Usually dragons are set in the past, and it's funny because there's not necessarily something inherently historical about dragons. Maybe it's just easier to imagine in a faraway time that they would have existed. But they could easily be in modern times just as much as in the past. So So I think that this was fun to bring it into our time. And, I mean, the literary references, Miltonic scenes, like going down to Milton, Shakespeare tendered. I really like Parabolic Breeze. You know, referencing the muses, that whole second stanza is like references like crazy. There's also quite a bit of alliteration, flames, fire, fantastic, four tree, flare. There's so much F going on there. and the fun names of plants. Like, these are all real plants, but bulrush and duckweed and wolfsbane. So lots of plants that also have animals in the name. So I like that because with the dragon that is made of plants, you have this concept of animals that are actually plants. The bulrush, the duckweed, the wolfsbane. And it's connecting those living, I mean, I guess plants are living too, but like the sentient creatures with the plants and interweaving that. I thought that was really clever to make that work with the image. Princesses lying on tapestry quilts. And the thing is that tapestries often include princesses. And so are they lying on them as if they're, like, on top of them, or are they lying on them within them? They are the tapestry. I think there's lots of really cool mental images here that fully embrace the complexity of the image.
Yeah, absolutely. And my hand, sorry. So Captain Kerr got the silver, and Ella Rose actually did the judging for this. She read all the poems ahead of time, and she helped with the judging. She did the first, second, third, and helped me with the honorable mention. So she really liked this description as well. And I think you know, it is very descriptive and very picturesque in its description, you know, so I think it really, you know, I wish, you know, she could have been here to be able to talk about why she gave it the silver. But also I think the personality of the dragon there. And I do want to say, I can't believe I never thought to rhyme dragon with fraggin. And she, even though she didn't really do that here, I'm very excited to write a poem now that I'm going to write a rhyming poem and I'm going to rhyme dragon with fraggin. So watch out, world, it's coming. But it's, you know, it's both fun and fantastical and really, like I said, paints that picture of this just really powerful dragon. And, you know, with the picture, I think it captures it because it's not like it's a world on its back. It's like controlling the world. And there are, you know, if you study myths, which I know you do, Faizy, you know, there's so many myths of, you know, I forget which myth it is, but there's one where the entire world is on the back of a turtle. You know, that's really where we are. Or mountains are, you know, creatures that were destroyed long ago. There's so much of these, you know, enormous, gigantic creatures in the universe or the world, and it kind of reminded me a lot of that as well. Descriptive poetry is definitely an art form of its own, a type of poetry that I'm always envious of. It's very hard for me to do that. And I think Captain did a great job. So awesome, awesome. And that was it for that one, so I think we're going to another prompt.
I'd like to say hi to Truth, who's on the board. Truth Chills, hello. She was asking if she wrote for this contest. I don't see her in it, but I could be missing something.
Did we do it last time? This is part two, Truth. We did one 2 weeks ago with the artist was able to call in. And then this is kind of, we had carryover. So she was unable to call in today, unfortunately, but this is, you might have wrote for it in the last, and we did this the last show.
I do have quite a few contests going on, too, so she may be in one of my other ones. It's entirely possible. And you mentioned the world on the back of a turtle, and that is actually quite common in myths. A lot of the indigenous peoples of North America, both Canada and the USA, have myths revolving around that. In China, there is something of that. In Hindu mythology, so in many different cultures, there is the thought of being on the back of a turtle. And really interesting that places from all over the world would come up with that concept before they interacted with each other, as far as we know. So it seems to be something that is inherent in human ideas. Really cool.
Well, ancient astronaut theorists would say, you know, just saying that. Yeah, it is interesting, and you know, it's turtles are interesting. You know, they have the hard shells, right? The and they're very slow, so you could see people thinking of that. Truth, I just looked at the contest. I don't see that you wrote for it, unfortunately. But if you would like to still write a poem, if you're interested in this art, I can absolutely pass it on to the artist. She would love to see it if that's something you're interested in. She's also a member of All Poetry as well, so you can find her on here. But feel free to write for it if you would like me to share it. Anyway, let's move on with life. So what do we got? We got a new prompt.
We do. Thank you for reminding me how to talk about the prompts. So prompt 5. Was an image of, I'm going to say, a woman who has green skin and blue eyes and looks a little bit fairy-ish to me, some kind of mystical creature. And her hair, or at least above her head, possibly hat, but I think her hair is made up of plants. There are vines and all kinds of colors of flowers, some bigger than others. And she has nature all around her, but it seems like it's coming out of her. So I would see her as kind of a Mother Earth figure, but let's find out how other people took it. Our first poem to that prompt is by Jesna Sejen, and that's This Is Our Identity. Here, let us join hands. This is our world. Our universe continues to give birth to many more like us to unfold. We have built this nature from Earth. We have no sorrow or plunder or bloodshed. We have leaders who know the scales of equality. Our children are not murdered or disrespected because we know the value of humanity. See if one among us is fighting for any land. Each one has equal quantity to sow and reap. We provide our people from our motherland fruits and fauna and trees of high leap. Why do we fight over a created story or belief? Rule us or bow down to handcrafted beings. Bear the tears of our neighbors. Where's the relief? Plumber our lands to create profit and wrongdoings. Crimes are corrected by our elders in stages. Accused are sent back to school under rehabilitation. Made to work, learn many lessons of morality gauges, then rewarded with a certificate of appreciation. We have leaders who have proved their capability, learned under our elders, written their experiences to run schools and colleges and even a municipality. We do not have walls to guard us, or even fences. Our brethren of ancient origins from foreign lands, they loved our motherland, developed gracefully. We are thankful to all departed, to grains of sand. They have shaped our motherland, given rich history. Let's join together tomorrow to remember our journey. It's one of a kind love. Respect each and every being. It's today we appreciate what we have is earned to see. We will continue our work together and learn by doing. and Paul.
Excellent, excellent. And unfortunately, this is a fantasy because a lot of these things are not happening right now. But how much do we love Jesna? It's so positive. Whenever I see things like this is obviously a positive vision of the future, and my guess is that she is seeing the mix of humanity and nature, which is what this, how I took this to be, not as much Mother Nature, but as this just merging, you know, equality and balance between humanity and nature. Humanity, you know, we are nature, right? We're just animals. But unfortunately, it has now become humanity against nature. And, you know, what did Crosby, Stills, and Nash say? We've got to get ourselves back to the garden. So there you go. You know, if only these things were true, right? On a personal note, I've been so negative lately, and I can't help it because all I see when I drive around, when I go, is just selfishness all over the place, and it's been driving me insane. It's really been since 2015, and I'm in the United States. I don't know how the rest of you are in the rest of the world, but things since 2015 have really been going downhill. And I'm watching very, very extreme infighting and corruption within the government in the United States right now, and it just falling apart. It's very sad to see. And I love poems like this that show what can be. Like, I want to say, the reason I'm at this Congress is I want to take this to Congress and read it to them and say, just do this. This is what you need to be. Do this and we'll be fine. You know, get the meaning of this here. It also, when I read these, it also reminds me of science fiction. I think that Star Wars and Star Trek, for those of you who like science fiction, I believe they're two of the most popular science fiction franchises of all time because they're positive. Star Trek, you know, they all have you know, fights and wars and everything. But Star Trek is in a positive future. Earth is great. There's a balance. Everybody's happy. Everybody has money. If you see when they show Earth, it's a really nice place. It's a world government that it looks like everybody's happy. And in Star Wars, there's a million planets that are basically thriving, and things are pretty good. Yes, there's horrible planets or people are poor, but it's, you know, the universe is kind of there at least. It's like a positive future, and that's what this reminds me of too. So again, Jesna, I really like it a lot, and it is unfortunate fantasy. Hopefully someday your vision will come true. What do you think, Faizy? That was a lot of me preaching for about 5 minutes it's just what brought to mind.
No, I thought it was a great response. You know, poetry is meant to make us think, and I like where your mind took it. And I think we can all be guilty of getting overwhelmed by the negativity. You know, we get burnt out. There's doom scrolling where we just, you know, look through our feed of all the horrible things that are happening. And I've been trying to, I can't remember what it's called now. It's the opposite of doom scrolling, when you're like looking at good news, realizing that there are still good things. They just aren't thrown at us quite the same. I think that this is a beautiful look at what we want our identity to be as humans. That connection with nature that she's getting through this image works really beautifully. And then they're thinking about, like, you know, how this is going to work for the future generations, planning ahead, and to join together tomorrow to think about where it's going. And I think that's beautiful. The idea of, like, why fight over land when there's enough for everyone? When it says created story, I wonder if it's like creation stories, kind of talking about how, like, people fight about religion, and even within pretty much the same religion, there's lots of fights about, like, how to worship.
Yeah.
little six of the same thing, fighting over little details rather than just following the basic practice of, like, let's do good, which is often the essence of them, of most religions, but it's just, it gets caught up in the little details and then they fight over them. So she's saying, like, why worry about what people believe when you can just follow that and be good and create harmony. When she says plumber our lands, I kind of thought of that as like plunder our lands, but that could just be how I would take it. Where is it? The idea of like respecting your elders, but also it talks about how they have to have credentials, they have experience and things, and you know, you don't just follow anyone blindly. These are people who have shown the way, and that they have rehabilitation for people who have lost their way. I think this is so full of hope and beautiful. And that connection to nature that inspired it is just wonderful. And the idea that the earth provides and we provide to the earth, the back and forth. It's just a beautiful dream, Jesna. I really love that optimism.
And the first thing I want to say is, I don't know why I wasn't thinking this before, but if you do want to write for any of these prompts, Truth or anyone else, if you're on Instagram, you can also follow the artist on, she's under Ice Cubes and Dragonfire on Instagram as well, too. I'll speak for her saying she would, I'm sure, love to hear comments on her art, or if you want to write a poem and share with her, I'm sure she would absolutely love it. She really enjoyed reading these. What you said, Faizy, about the religion is really interesting. What got me actually kind of obsessed with philosophy and reading the different religious texts is I was watching this old show called Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher. And what he used to do was, I found it fascinating because he would get like bizarre people together who would never be together. So there was this one show that was like some preacher, I don't know who he was, and like Sandra Bernhardt, a senator, and like some rock and roll guy, just these people who would never get together. And they're just discussing things. And everybody was being like answering questions, and everything out of this preacher's mouth was hatred. It was just, he was yelling at everyone. He was just up. He was so angry that every answer out of everybody else's mouth wasn't Jesus or wasn't the Bible. And he was just like he was getting me angry. What, you could just feel the hatred in him. And what I came out of that was, that can't be the Catholic religion. It just can't be. There's no way it is. So that's what got me kind of, I read the Bible cover to cover a couple of times. I've read the Buddhist philosophy text, the Bhagavad Gita and all those, or the Quran. And they are very, very much saying the same thing. And it really is, like you were saying, it's peace. You know, if you read it, it's, There's some, you know, doctrines in there of you know, punishment and you know, rules to follow, but it's basically just emphasizing peace and harmony is what most of it is, especially the New Testament. So it is true, and fighting over little stupid things or people interpreting it their own way for their own selfish reasons is sad. I'm rambling on tonight. I was watching this show I've been watching the show on ancient Britain, all these archaeology things, and one of the things I noticed was they went through the whole kind of like a history of ancient Britain from 11,000 years ago till now, and the way they were describing the people like 11, 10, 9,000 years ago was kind of a lot of shamans, but in touch with nature, like worshiping deers and a lot of communal things is what they found. And when the wars and the human sacrifice and all the nastiness kind of came is basically when the Romans brought Catholicism there. which I found very interesting. I'm not anybody who's Catholic. I'm not trying to say anything against it. I just found it very interesting when organized religion and monotheism was brought in there, and it wasn't as much, you know, just kind of worshiping nature. It is when kind of a lot of bloodshed, and when like witches, you know, people started burning witches and things like that. It was just very interesting. All right, stop me, Faziana. Bill, yeah, Bobby, that's a blast.
I find
the past
it fascinating,
tomorrow,
anyway. But I'm gonna reel us back into
reel us
to
back
the poetry.
In. I'm sorry, I'm
we have someone calling in. 1 second.
I'm days without sleep, so I'm a little rib.
That's okay.
Hello, everybody. It's Robbie.
Hi, Robbie. Welcome.
Hey,
there.
Robbie.
Hey there. I'm calling in from my new phone, and
right.
Sometimes it has a glitch. Like the sound goes sparky after like maybe an hour or something. I think it only does that when I'm playing music. But if it does that, just if you hear that, that's what it is. And then I have to hang up and reboot the phone and I'm fine. So hopefully they'll take care of that with another update. But anyways,
no worries. Glad you called. I'm guessing it's the
yep.
Bill Maher got you all excited and you wanted to call.
No, it's funny because that's the second. I'm just trying to remember what the other thing was. I was listening to another poetry show earlier today, and someone was mentioning something else from the 90s, I think it was, and that I hadn't heard about in a long time. And, yeah, I remember I used to see that too, Bill Maher, and I just remember the same thing, how he had, like, the most diverse people on and that. And now, though, like, if you tried that, everything's so polarized in that. I mean, you'd have to have security. Everybody would be like just literally tearing at each other, eh? Because
yeah.
Even more so than ever now, everything's just polar, just completely my way or the highway. So, but I mean, that's
yeah.
a whole discussion in and of itself.
absolutely. Well, awesome that you joined, and I have a feeling that Faze is going to put you to work right away.
Well, in a moment, yes, but first, actually, our next poem we have an audio for. So I'm going to play the audio from Weaver of Dreams, but then I will get Robbie commenting on that. So let's hear from Weaver.
Earth Mother awakens to another gray and gloomy morning. With a sigh, she calls for nature's ninjas. Not her choice of sobriquet. We thank you for that make our rivers run, not ooze, gala day. Yes, it raised awareness, but we still need more people to join us. Last week's pick-up lunch and some litter didn't go down too well either. The trips to sewage plants called from your urinals back to you, no. Never. Electronic pathways disturb that close connection I have with humankind. Each day's disruptions deplete and dim my light. I must be able to recharge. We can't go back in time. Our only hope is to re-educate the world and eliminate the brain drain.
Thank you for that audio, Weaver. We love when people send us SoundClouds or YouTube so we can hear the poems in your own voice, even if you can't call in at the time of the show. So please, if you write for us and you want to share your voice, feel free to do so. Now, Robbie, I'm going to get you to comment first on this poem.
Okay. It's rare that I've got a pretty extensive vocabulary, so I'm always impressed when somebody uses a word that I haven't come across before. And it was the, sobriquet. I was like, oh, I have to look that up. But, which I saw was like a nickname or preferred nickname. And this poem touches a lot upon, well, just like what's happening with Mother Nature and Mother Earth now. Where I live, we had like 20 plus 20 in recently about a week ago, And for October, that is insane. Like, that's, I live closer to the north, right? And where this should be like 12 degrees or something, or maybe a little lower than that. And today the weather was just all over the place. Like, literally we had rain, hail, sun, cloud, all in the same day, and sometimes like within a few hours. And for me, also this poem is kind of like touching upon what I was thinking about, is that what Mother Nature has to do to get our attention. It's gotten to the point of we're damaging her so much that she almost has to scream now, you know? Like, we've seen, this doesn't like really touch on the extreme part of it, like with, in terms of disaster, all the disasters that we have, like one after another, after another, after another. But it does lead me to that track of thought in a way, because I'm thinking of, like, this poem talks about how Mother Nature, only hope is to re-educate the world and eliminate the brain drain. And it's talking about electronic pathways to serve that close connection. And so it touches upon, like, what we have to do and what Mother Nature has to do to get our attention. And when I think about what Mother Nature has to do to get our attention these days, it's the extreme measures, you know, like seeing just how messed up the weather patterns are and all that. It's like she's screaming, you messed me up. Stop it. And so that kind of put me down that track of thinking. And for some reason, the electronic pathways disturb the close connection is the line that really caught my attention. I think because it can go in a couple of ways, because you see the people that are like punched into their phones and just like practically walking into things. Like, I saw someone on his cell phone while he was riding a Segway, of all things. But then also the way the electronic pathways themselves disturb Mother Nature, like possibly with 5G, sort of, you know, and radiation and all that kind of thing. Just all the different radiations that we pump out there that we don't look at the consequences of how it affects Mother Nature and how it affects us.
Yes, I think that's sort of what she was going for here with, you know, Mother Nature looks around and is like, we need to do something, and she's yelling. I think you're right. I think that that idea of her waking up and realizing something has to happen is a poke at us to wake up and see, and there definitely is a lot of extremes lately. I think she points out the kind of cutesy way that people try to get people involved. Nature's ninjas, pick up lunch and some litter. Those are good initiatives, and, you know, they do a certain amount. I definitely see people in my own area cleaning up the beaches and things like that, but there's, you know, the fact that it continuously needs to be done is because not everyone gets it. I mean, like, I pulled over at a rest stop on Sunday, and there was garbage all over the ground. And I was so mad because there was a garbage can and recycling and compost there at the little bathroom thing. It's, like, in the middle of nowhere, but there's very clearly, like, the proper bins. And people just had garbage all over the place. And I was like, this is ridiculous. It's right there. You get out of your car and you put it in the thing. You don't just toss it out the way. I was so mad. You know, it's nice that we have the things where people clean up. But when it talks about how we have to re-educate the world, I think that is key, that we need to make sure that people know enough not to cause the problem in the first place, so we don't have to clean it up. And I mean, like, obviously litter is a small thing in the grand scheme of things, but that attitude that leads to litter is also the attitude that leads to us making bigger pollution choices because it's more convenient. It's all about that attitude of easier and cheaper.
it's that blasé sort of man that drives me crazy. Like at the marina, everybody feeds the geese, and there's just geese shit all over the place. And the thing is, and they just go, it's not going to do them any harm in that. And the thing is, it's bad all around. It's bad for all the poop and everything they leave around, but it's bad for them too, because they usually feed them bread and that is not what they're built for, and it'll expand in their stomachs and they'll just die. And you know, when you tell people what, that's what I can't stand is when you tell people that and they go, you know, they just like, they literally wave their hand and they go, it's like they think
that
you're
being,
it's
like their 2 minutes of fun is worth the death of the animal.
Yeah, they're a little bit of fun, and if you showed them the article right there, like no big deal, no word, like they refuse to accept that reality because it doesn't fit their convenience, right? Like you say, like they just want to have the pleasure of I'm feeding the animal, I'm doing good. It's like, no, you're not. I don't know why that one particular thing bugs me more than others. Or it seems to particularly bug me, but it's just because it's so preventable and it's so blasé, and it just seems to be a particular blind spot because people want to feel good, you know, by like feeding the animals, but they just don't understand that animals are not built the same way as us and they don't eat the same things as us. So.
Yeah. And it makes them not migrate. And like, so they freeze to death. It's just, there's so many reasons it's wrong. And I think that it makes sense as one that bugs you because it's one where the knowledge is out there. There's always signs everywhere. It's been well known for a long time and people still aren't acting on it. And I think that's like a microcosm. It's representative of things in general. So those little things start to irk us because they represent the larger problem.
Absolutely. It's the geese thing bugs me too. It's just not. It's just, but it's like the world is there for everybody's plaything, you know. And it's not. It's a mutual respect that we need. And I mean, we could go on for hours on you know what she's saying. First of all, I want to say with Weaver, this Weaver did not write for the contest. This one, she wrote a different one for the contest we read last time, and she wrote this about a week ago to play on the show again. So she was inspired a second time. For Ella's artwork and put this on. So thanks, Weaver, for adding the extra one on here. That was great. And yes, it's very scary. I think it's absolutely fixable, 100%. I think we can totally fix it. And positivity I see is that there are my son is turning 21, and his generation, for the most part, I think is very aware and very into it. And I think that's a good sign. It's really not the regular people that I worry about. It's the ones in charge, you know, who don't listen, and they're the ones that have the control. You know, we're in a machine. There's a machine on right now, and it's really hard to stop. I don't know how to turn it off. You know, right now I'm, you know, drinking a glass of wine, which I probably shouldn't be drinking right now, from a bottle that I got a bottle for. That I'm gonna put in the recycle bin, but they don't recycle anymore in my town because they don't know where to put it. And I'm staring at a computer that's using electricity, and I have two phones sitting here, you know, and I'm probably going to have a snack before I go to bed, which is in prepackaged materials. I don't know how to buy food another way. There's not really a way to do it. I don't know how to heat myself without, you know, burning natural gas. I don't know how to go to the store without getting in a car. It's just, you know, I walk everywhere I can. I walk a lot now, and I haven't gotten a bag at a store in years. You know, little things we can try to do. The machine is on, and I don't know how to turn it off without like extreme problems. You know, it's going to take a lot of effort to try to go to bulk, to try to go to, you know, electricity and solar and all that stuff to really change the whole way the world does things, and to you know, limit our the amount of people that are on the world without, you know, Thanos getting involved. If anybody knows that reference. So, all right, that's my speech to the world there. Let's now put Robbie to work, I think.
Yeah.
And thank you, Bo. That inspired an amazing conversation, Weaver, so thank you.
It did. And I'm in my villain era because I'm a fan of snapping. not literally, but... okay, so this next poem is by Blue Leader 1. It's called The Prince or the Unicorn, and it is to prompt 6, which is a woman, a very tough-looking woman, on a unicorn, but it actually looks like it's a horse wearing armor that has a horn on it. So it's a man-made unicorn, and when I say man-made, that it, I mean that gender-neutrally, a human-made. The woman on it looks very serious, and something about the way her hair is makes me feel like she's like a warrior, but also she's in armor, and they're surrounded by nature, and there are lines drawn around her as if she almost, like, maybe has a halo, or maybe it's a crown. There are gold lines that seem to emanate from her that are more cartoony than the rest of it, which makes me feel like there's light coming from her, like maybe she has, like, an angelic kind of situation going on. So we'll see how that was interpreted by Blue Leader 1. And, Robbie, I'm going to get you to read that poem, please.
Okay, so here we go. The Prince or the Unicorn. The Prince, a unicorn, a temporal power, a magical being, that towers or an allegory from antiquity. Which is greater? Can the Prince grant wishes? Can the Unicorn? I would wish for innocence and insouciance, because I got off the boat, I saw the tiger. And I haven't been the same since. Can I ever go back? Can I ever go back home? I don't think I can. But if there was a unicorn, oh, how I would wish. Does the prince dream he is a prince? Sometimes I dream I am the prince. I once saw a unicorn in Blade Runner. He was a real gunner. I know I am the fool. Still, I wish not to fear the step forward. I only want to see the open horizon. And that is The Prince or the Unicorn.
Great read. Thank you. So he made it a prince rather than a princess or knight. And, you know, a lot of people in the earlier prompts that were from last time interpreted the art as males because they are very tough-looking women. I know from the artist that they are women, but it also could be that if he's putting himself into the poem, then he's imagining a male version of the story. And it doesn't have to be literally the people in the image. I like that contrast of wondering which one is the one who grants wishes. Does the prince grant wishes to this horse, kind of transforming it into a unicorn with that armor? Or is the unicorn providing the wish to the human by carrying them around, by making them look cool, riding the unicorn, taking them to the places? It could go either way. And I think sometimes when we think that we are the wish granter, we are actually the one receiving help. And other way around, sometimes we are aiming for help, maybe when we reach out in a friendship and you end up helping the other person. So sometimes there's a mutual benefit that you're not really sure which one is granting the wish. So that was interesting to think about. Robbie, you were talking about before having to look up a word, and I confessed I looked up insouciance, which I'm sure I'm saying wrong, and that means the casual lack of concern or indifference. So to want innocence and to want that lack of concern is understandable, I think, as we were talking earlier about how stressed out we are about everything that's happening in the world, and to long for that kind of ability to tune it all out. But then when it says, because I got off the boat, I saw the tiger, it made me think of Life of Pi, which is a novel and then was turned into a movie. How do I say this without spoilers? The tiger is symbolic in that story, and I'm not going to get into why in case you haven't read it / watch it, because I think it is a valuable story. So I'm just going to say to Blue Leader 1, if that was a reference to Life of Pi, I think it is brilliant, and I'm going to interpret it as such. So go read Life of Pi if you have not, and then reflect on how that makes this poem awesome. and then there's that questioning of, can you go back? Can you go home? Because once you've experienced things, sometimes it's hard to go back to where you were. When you know too much, maybe things were not done ethically where you used to work or grew up, and then you went out into the world and you realized, like, oh shoot, like that was wrong. I'm definitely learning that a little bit. I've been doing some truth and reconciliation work with the indigenous peoples, recognizing some stuff that went down at my school that was not okay, that I didn't really know about, but kind of sideways participated in without realizing. So, you know, we learn things about our homes and our past, and then we have to reconcile with that before we can, you can never fully go back to not knowing. Wondering, what's real? Because when it talks about Blade Runner, in Blade Runner, nobody's really sure if they're a replicant. So the replicants are like clones, and they are clones, and you don't know who is a unicorn, who is a replicant. Are you real? And then the kind of questions, what is? Are you just a dream? And then when he says, "I am the fool," he capitalizes fool, which for me makes me think of tarot, because in the cards there is a figure, the fool, and the capitalization of the and fool makes me feel like he's talking about that figure rather than just saying, you know, I'm a fool. So that's where my mind goes, is the tarot card, but it could be another reference that he's making. Dan, what were your thoughts?
Excellent thoughts there, yes. And I agree with you with the tarot card. I thought about that with the fool, but also the fool as the actual fool, because we're talking about the princes, right? He's making the fool as a, you know, I don't know if the fool is an actual position, you know, an appointed position in medieval times, but, you know, that's what he's saying he played. And Blue Leader 1 actually told me what the, because I got off the boat, I saw the tiger, what that reference is. And the reference is, unless he also did Pi, the reference is actually to Apocalypse Now, a kind of a deep cut scene when they get off the boat just to get some mangoes, and all of a sudden they meet a tiger and they go running back, a tiger, and he's never leave the boat. And so that was the kind of thing where they, you know, that's what his reference actually was to, you know, going off and going on your own, and then he saw the tiger and he comes back. So if you've never seen Apocalypse Now, it's a very, very dark movie, but it's amazing. I think it's the best, arguably the best war movie ever made. Very, very dark. So yeah, that's what I saw the tiger was. And yeah, it's an interesting, you know, parallel. So we have the prince and the horse, so that, you know, the unicorn and, sorry, I'm losing my mind here today. And, you know, going back and forth for it, because there's a line in there, where is it? Does the prince dream he is a prince, right? So, you know, does the prince not think who they are? And I thought that was an amazing line because, you know, I do that. And I've been self-deprecating myself all night, but I do that. Now, I'm a musician, a drummer, not famous. I don't, you know, I'm not playing anywhere, but I think I'm halfway decent. But I still dream of being a famous musician, or you dream of doing these things, right? You know, and so does the prince not think himself prince worthy, and he dreams of actually, you know, being more princely than he is. And so kind of back and forth from the temporal power to the magic being, right? So, I thought that was that was an interesting phase. Busy.
All right. Well, I know that you have to go. Dan is not feeling well and has been pushing through it, and I appreciate that. You've been a champion, but go to bed.
Huh.
I'm being the bossy mom. Go to bed. Okay? I think he's already gone. Yep.
I think he already went, yeah.
He is. He's gone. Okay. all right. Yeah, he texted me a long time ago saying, like, I don't know if I can do this. And he tried. So thank you, Dan. A good bet. Now, Robbie, would you like to comment on Blue Leader One's poem?
Yes. I came across a lot of the same things, like with the fool. I'm sure that is the tarot. Fool, because it says, well, not just because it's capitalized, but because it says, I am the fool. And so to me, like the saying, like, it's like that singular, like the, it's like when you say the, it's like the figure of the fool. So I'm sure that that is what it's in reference to. And it would be interesting to see if it's in reference to something else, because I love when a piece of work, whether it's a poem or another sort of piece of writing, like a short story or something, has more than one meaning. And when you mentioned like the unicorn and Blade Runner, and, you know, how do you know you're not a replicant? And of course, in the movies, there's that part where it says, how do you know you're not a replicant, Decker? And he's like, well, come on, you know, kind of that attitude. But it kind of touched upon it for me in terms of, there's a branch of philosophy or an idea of philosophy called solipsism, where it says that you can only be aware of, you can only be absolutely sure of your own existence. So it's kind of like, well, everybody else is the dreamer. I'm the real one, you know, which is kind of just one of those things. It's like, you can't think about it too long, because if you do, you'll get a headache, an existential one and probably a real one. And, just in terms of the almost literally the structure of the poem, but literary wise as well, I don't think I've ever come across a poem. I would say that I haven't, that it winds in upon itself so much in terms of its ideas. If that's, I'm thinking that's the best way I could say it. Just like the way the ideas entwine together and the way one goes into another and then into another. And this is definitely a poem that kind of like, the more I think about it, the more I read it. I mean, I've only read it once so far, but I know that the more I read it, the more I'll like it. It seems to have a feeling of unwinding more and more ideas as you read. And there's just something about when I had read it, it just had that esoteric sort of feeling, like some poems do. You can't really explain why or how, but just a feeling of realness. Like you read a poem and it just somehow feels so real in your head. Like you feel like you're almost getting a virtual reality sort of playing out in your mind. So that's definitely a feeling that I got from this poem.
And that takes skill to create that in a person. You know, I think that's a compliment to the leader that you were able to get into that space. You know, that's something I've really missed in reading ever since my brain tumor, actually since I got it removed. I was very vivid imagination when I had the brain tumor, but I used to be able to, when I read, like, fully be in the moment. You're reading a fantasy book and it's like all around me, virtual reality style. It's like I'm there. And then now it's like, here are words. I know what's happening. I know what's going on. It's interesting. But I'm not like in it the same way. And I miss that so much. And I don't know if I was a normal person before or a normal person now, but I used to like basically hallucinate the book and it was wonderful. And I'm like, I don't know which one is accurate. Like
the gift without the curse, you know? And it seems like sometimes it's a subconscious thing. Like, it just sprang to my mind that I was surprised that I forgot about it when you get into conversation, you know, you lose track on something. But when I talked about just wanting to have that casualness in that, mm-hmm. I found like 2 years ago, like I was at work and it was like only my second shift and I was solo. And normally I would have panicked or would have been like, oh, no. But it was weird. Like something unbidden had flipped a switch in my head. It was like my subconscious. And it was like, no, you're not going to worry about this. And it wasn't like hostile or anything. It was like a caring part of my subconscious. It switched on. It said, no, I know you're tired of feeling like that. And I'm going to block it for you. You know, not like a la-la-la sort of way, but just like deal with it sort of way, right? And, like, ever since then, I found so many times where I'm like, wait a minute, I'm taking the bus home and I'm not thinking about this one thing that would normally be preying on my mind. And it's weird when it's another part of your brain that does it for you, or it's like your conscious mind can't do it. It's too much the controller, the dictator, and your subconscious, which is more flowing and organic in that. It's just like, don't worry, I'll take over. I'll do it for you.
Yes.
I
love when that happens.
Yeah.
I had this boss who was like, you are so amazing when you're in character, because I kind of sort of do acting when I'm like presenting the kids. And she's like, you're totally different. He's like, you usually seem so like nervous and afraid of everything and stuff. And he's like, but when you're in character, you just like go nuts in front of the crowd and it's perfect. And I was like, yeah, I'm better when I'm not me. And he was like, so make a character. And I'm like, what? And he's like, be the character you want to be. And so like when I'm at work, I put on the like librarian character, and and then I'm more confident in everything that I'm doing, because I'm like, this is just a character I'm playing, but it's actually me. It's just like the better me.
Yeah, it's another facet that's coming out, and yeah,
it works.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably disassociating in unhealthy ways, but it works. Our next poem to the art, and this is generally to the art. He did not pick a specific prompt. He just wrote in general after looking at all the paintings, is by Peter Solway. So I'm going to read that. And disclaimer, this is probably going to be dark and dirty, because Peter Solway usually is. I haven't pre-read this one, but he tends to get right into things gritty, so if you're sensitive, be prepared. Pincushions by Peter Solway. Her art inspired by diapers, darning mothers who gossip, witches of missing, needles of itching, school of truants. Task of getting it down, number one. Art of internet promotion, next along. A strange god who watches on, hinting a little darker there. Yes, little sharper here with her tapestry of St. George and the dragon. Poor beauty to prick herself. Such the cost of lonely art. No prints to knock, collect or purchase. Canvases of a lifetime's thoughts. Thinking about it myself. No bacon of retrospect. Whitely to needle himself. Theme of self-harm, keeping it clean. Butterflies to pin. Hum of heroin. Poppies of the far, far east. Defy the goat of death. Paint the ghost released. Little soutine to soil his village. Tack up luminous meat. Me and Facebook her. Just artistic companions, keen to pin something down. Nail a coffin, maybe? End poem. I'm so used to Dan jumping in. He's not here. All right, Robbie, would you like to comment?
It's definitely the most unique, like, well, it starts, like it says, pincushion. And it's funny, like, for some reason, I didn't hear the title before you read. But in a way, that kind of left me more free to notice the patterns in that, because I was like, oh, well, there's a lot of pins in here. And, yeah, I see the title now, Pincushions, and I'm just thinking about the way he's applying that imagery, kind of think about how people feel pinned down in society, and I also think about how they pin other people down. I'm not too sure if the Facebook one was a reference, but me and Facebook her just artistic companions, keen to pin something down. Nail a coffin, maybe. And with that one, I'd have to think about that Danza a couple more times. An initial impression I got was how, especially like with social media, like we're kind of seeing sometimes who we want to see or who they're presenting themselves as, and which isn't necessarily the real them. And we're kind of pinning down what that is. Like, it was, oh, that's what they're like. So you pin down the personality as that. And so it kind of made me think on two kind of like sides of the same coin of the idea of both being pinned down metaphorically in different situations and then pinning other people down in other situations. So kind of like constraining ideas versus someone constraining your ideas or your identity by pinning you down. So that's kind of like the back and forth, to and fro that I got by when I heard the poem.
I like your interpretation. When I first read it, I was kind of thinking he was insulting the artist, like her art inspired by diapers, like saying it's poop. And mothers who are gossiping, it felt kind of derogatory. But then, as it goes on, like canvas of a lifetime's thought, you know, putting so much thought into the art. But then, no bacon of retrospect. And that kind of makes me think of, like, the expression bringing home the bacon. And artists often are starving artists. They, you know, don't make a lot of profit. And then looking back on it, it's like, well, that wasn't a financially successful career. But sometimes people are famous post-mortem. And the nail in a coffin, maybe. So it's like, you know, artistic companions on Facebook, they buy her collection, and then maybe after she dies, it'll be more valuable. That came to mind, but that might just be my my own thing. And then there's that contrast of self-harm, but keeping it clean, which, speaking of which, this is probably the cleanest poem I've read by Peter. And then butterflies depend. So it's like to preserve the beauty, you also kill it. And so There's something about by trying to share your art, posting it on places like Facebook and Pinterest and things like that, maybe you somehow diminish it, and you've made it so it's able to be enjoyed by more people, but you're probably not going to make as much off of it, even though you have more exposure, because people have access to it for free in certain mediums. That's
well, I was
just
wondering if Bacon
top.
Was referring to Francis Bacon. That could be that could be completely far afield, but it is capitalized. And Bacon, like when I read about Bacon here, I have to refresh myself a little bit on Bacon, but it does talk a lot about empiricism and that sort of thing. It says, led the advancement on both natural philosophy and the scientific method. So I was thinking maybe it's referring to kind of how we itemize things and categorize things and all of that. So, like, you know, when you see someone on Facebook or you're looking at people's art, you're kind of like itemizing it for yourself and categorizing it. Again, his poem is such that it could be totally that or it could totally not be that, but I would think it's a possibility.
I would say that you're right. It is capitalized, and he does things like that on purpose, and often he references various artists and philosophers and things. So I think that you were totally right, and I missed that reference, but I would vote that you are on the right track there.
I feel like I'm in a reality TV show now. But I have voted your answer to be right. And on the opposite, no, he's wrong. He's wrong about that poem. Minus 20 points to him.
I unfortunately have no prizes to offer. AP points, that's all I have.
A full membership, yay!
I can barely afford that myself. If someone would like to donate a membership to Ravi for his right answer, that we have to confirm with Peter that it is correct. But speaking of gold, our next title has mm-hmm. gold in it, The Golden Child of War by Adeline J. Adams. And Robbie, would you please read that for me?
Okay. Golden Child of War. She stood dressed purple, made of the finest cloth, embroidered with threads of only gold. Often seen gazing from the stained glass windows, a small wooden rabbit in her slender hand she does hold. In the window she watches for the young men to return. The rabbit had been a gift carved for her from the door of her birth, the day her village burned. The only one still standing when all else has been destroyed, saved by a soldier who for her had craved the wooden toy. She had smiled at the general that had taken her former life away. In her eyes, he saw gratitude as he lifted her upon his mighty steed and took her to his home that day. The daughter he had taken, he had somehow knew her worldly gift. With the power of her vision, he would his fame and fortune lift. The tiny child had ushered in the time of legends and of myths. She is the muse of power, golden glory as never seen before. No longer would she be kept in shackles and locked away behind an iron or wooden door, free and dressed in all her glory, the golden child of war. Graceful as a swarm she walked, yet crafty as a fox, ivory skin and pale green eyes, and her yellow sunlight flowing down her back in curly locks. Her rosé lips smile gently over the small teeth that are as white as the finest woolen flocks. Forever she is safe to be safe behind the stained glass in a cathedral made of stone. Suitors and servants at her feet, she will never be alone. Always more to conquer until the world becomes her very own. And that is Golden Child of War.
Excellent read. Thank you. Really interesting piece by Adeline J. Adams. I love the concept of the rabbit being carved out of the wood of her door. You know, the village burns down, but they save the door to carve her out something to remember it by. That feels like it has, like, some really cool symbolic something that, like, this could be a larger story. This feels like an opening to a novel or, I don't know, some kind of epic series of poems. It just has such a great storytelling concept. And then the other thing is, even though she's powerful, she has servants and all that, she also kind of reminds me of like a Rapunzel figure where she's locked away in a tower. She sees everything from her stained glass windows. It starts with that, and it ends with that. Always safe behind her stained glass. There's more to conquer, but until the world becomes her very own, she's going to be stuck in this little tower. It seems very limiting to me. And she's really, a captive throughout the whole thing. He steals her, and he raises her as a daughter, but she's a daughter he had taken. She's not... there's definitely some negative feelings there. And she smiled at the general that had taken her former life away. So she has like kind of a Stockholm syndrome thing going on, and he sees gratitude, but she was probably too young to understand. And I don't know, there's something kind of like magical or like prophetic about her place being the only one that was saved, but it was saved by a soldier. So there was someone who was sparing her place, sparing her, and maybe it was this general specifically was looking to take on a little girl, and so decided to save her to be his daughter, who he seems to use for good luck and possibly having all of those suitors as getting a good dowry. I don't know. There's something sketchy about this guy. But I liked the wording of graceful as a swarm she walked. And swarm isn't generally something I think of as graceful because, like, bugs. But then it makes me think about when there's a group of birds who are all flying exactly together. And here I am waving my hands around as if you could see. I don't even know what to call it. I think it's a swarm. But there's a whole bunch of birds who move as a pack from tree to tree or across the sky, and they seem to have, like, choreography that they're following. It's beautiful. So for her to have the grace of that is just really nice. And, of course, she's pale and all of that because she never leaves her tower. So interesting choices here. The one thing that kind of threw me off was in both places where I thought it should be carved, it says craved, had craved the wooden toy. A gift craved for her. It's got to be carved. I think that's a mistake. I don't understand how craved works there. I'm really curious, Adeline, if there is a deeper meaning with the craved that I am missing. So you read it for us, but would you like to comment as well?
Well, I'm intensely curious myself about the whole rabbit, you know, and made out of wood. And it was an odd experience for me, odd in a good way. In the whole poem, I kept thinking of Joan of Arc because the whole, like, the stateliness and how, especially, like, the last, it's funny how something that probably totally unintended in a poem can come out like that, but especially for its, when it says, forever she is to be safe behind stained glass in a cathedral made of stone, and of course, you know, she had such a religious component to her. Suitors and servants at her feet, she'll never be alone. Especially when it says, always more to conquer until the world becomes her very own. And like, she just went on and on and on until, you know, she couldn't go on anymore. And just like some of the physical descriptions and that. And it was just surreal to me how, like, it was, like, this looks to be like a fictitious situation in that. But for some reason, I just kept thinking of Joan of Arc. It got to the point where I looked up Joan of Arc to see if there's any relation, anything about a rabbit with Joan of Arc. And, I didn't see anything. And it's funny, like, the way Google works. I got Joan of Arc, and then when I tried to put in rabbit, it said Barbie. It's like, no, I'm not looking for a Joan of Arc Barbie.
It's a rabbit added Barbie? That's so strange.
I know. Go figure Google out. You know, no one knows how. It's like they say, it's like a black box for Google. How the analytics engine works, but just the overall, there is, I would say, stately is very, very, very much the word I want to use. Stately in this poem, like, not quite royal. And it's hard for me to discern what the meaning is that would be different between stately and royal. But I guess stately is more focusing on the actual execution of the administration of war and royalty and all that, whereas royalty is more about the trappings. And this whole poem overall, and maybe that's part of why it gave me a Joan of Arc-ish sort of vibe, but it gave me that very stately feel of like the kind of the day to day of a figure of power. And I'm very curious about what this whole thing is about, the figure that came and took her away and why he did it, and kind of the oddness of how it was expressed in the poem, and, you know, the whole thing about the rabbits, and with the wooden rabbit, that my little tangent that I had was like the year of the rabbit, you know, in astrology. And there's a, like, they have elements that are added in that astrology too. Like, there's a metal rabbit or whatever, and there is like a wooden rabbit, right? So, of course, again, that didn't have anything to do with anything, I don't think, but this poem seems to particularly elicit a lot of tangential imagery for me, which I thought was really cool.
Well, I mean, the Joan of Arc thing makes sense to me because she has a lot of strong, armored females in her art, and, you know, I could see that kind of imagery suiting it. So that makes sense. That was the last one for that particular contest. I do have another contest that we're going to look at just briefly because we only have 10 minutes left, and it's to prompt, there's so much of my past self that I don't resonate with anymore, but I love her just the same. She was growing. She was doing her best. She fought hard to get me there. And there's an image of a woman who's laying down, and the top is very light, and then the bottom is kind of a darker version of the same woman. And the one on top has kind of a snowy-looking nighttime, and the one on the bottom has, I can't decide if it's cactuses or, like, cacti or seaweed. I think maybe seaweed because there's also bubbles. So she's on the underside, and it's the two sides of the person. So in 2 weeks, our show is going to be that, and I have a whole bunch of rights to it. But we're just going to do one tonight as a little sample to that. This one is by Ben Hart, and it's called Sunshine All Around Us. 1, the Eternal Theater. all around us. Reflections of a faded path, scars on the color of the water, actors giving their face to death, mourning the bygone mundane on a changing stage. To no avail. No requiem of applause, just silence between birdsong. The true portrayal of the duality of loss. That is the good that comes from grief. Simply for the sake of symmetry, it tells us of woe through false mirrors of lost depths, familiar faces of death, copy-pasted onto strangers, all humming the avian lament, gone to meet the past where it went, where it had gone ahead, and where is it now? Depends on the season of this eternal theater. Today is autumn, in which it begs to be forgotten, causes eyes to wander after birds walking over water, away from the wall in the garden, so it can grow over and then bleed from stone. And that was a beloved moment, but that was forever ago. 2. Dysphoria. Hold me not as midnight knew, because the last time you touched loving, it bruised. And when I look to that origin of echo, that morose ripple that grew throughout my body blue, I realize that all that could have killed me in 2023 were phantoms manifested through Trojan thoughts of you. And though dysphoria preceded your red arrival, you loved to be its muse. 3. Time. Time is of no concern to Siamese twins of pine, whose needle fingers only know how to catch autumn, one paper butterfly at a time. But it eats at a man's mind, trying to keep something of summer alive, in weary eyes that saw too much of the carelessness with which it is time. So cut the lines, heal your mind, find yourself in a place nigh divine, God knows where, and climb the pines, set it right, what time had taken from us. Take it back, for all life, climb the pines. 4. Nightmares and daydreams. Envy. I envy you. Really? This I must hear. You do what you love, despite rarely getting to do what you want. You're quite perceptive. I'll have to adjust that. Why? Because I love to be invisible. 5. Sunshine. Don't look at me, little one. Go on. Run. Or the little yellow van, mother christened Future, will roll down the hill without you in it. So run. Find a good life. And live it. 6. Traveler. There is a sadness that exists solely within one pretends, and one pretends it is them letting it out on the open road that makes it so morose. The passing of towns back in the distance where such upset is inherent, one of God's few truths that we do not like to see it, the lives we never lived. What could have been so good, what we never had to lose, until now, until the foot could choose to break, and without knowing why, we'd arrived just in time, in a place that doesn't know the meaning of our names, but reflects your grace and my distaste for gray, where the cobblestones meet weary feet like lover in a symphony of streets, each wilder than the other, only to find there was no need to grieve the pieces of ourselves we shed into the distance. There was never a need for our suffering, only a contrast to shape and to recover in. There was only a question in search of an answer, rather than in need of it, to find itself completed. There was only the lesson, the path of a dancer, is mostly breathing in without feeling it. There was only life, time, and light, until we made the moment the most of a good night. and poem. Would you comment first, please, Robbie?
There's so much about perception there and self-perception. And, that part that it grabbed me so much, you're quite perceptive. I'll have to adjust that. Why? Because I love to be invisible. And it's kind of like we have those moments where we have characteristics that make us more noticeable, perhaps. And they might be like positive characteristics, but there's times where we just feel like being invisible for a while because we got a lot of stuff going on and we're just afraid to make new connections, or we feel like we can't handle that many connections. And so it's like a lot that is touched on with perceptions, both of the self and to the external world around, like talking about what could have killed me in 2023, and it was all phantasms. And, well, I think we've all dealt with that for sure over the past, since 2020, like constantly negotiating, okay, like how much of this is an immediate reality right now? How much of this is perhaps something that's overblown? How much is, and everybody, you know, you're constantly negotiating for your own reality, because you know that your own reality is going to be sometimes quite different from someone else's, even though you've been honestly trying to evaluate from day to day what, you know, okay, well, what is my perception of what's going on right now? And the end of the poem especially really wound it up quite nicely. It just felt like the whole thought process was really wound up in regards to what the poem was contemplating. And sometimes something innocuous in a poem can really grab you. And for me, it was, don't look at me, little one, go on, run. Or the little yellow van, mother christened future. And it just had a personal connection with me that really like just grabbed me, and it's just such a visual for me. I just almost think of it like those little miniature almost photos that you see, like it makes everything look like it's in miniature, like in a toyscape. And I just think of this little yellow van, and that has the label future on it, and it's like it looks toy-like, and yet it's like something that's so important. And it's just, yeah, it's that one little, that little part there, it just somehow is just so visually stimulating and grabbing to me.
I like that. No, I think that's a really good observation. In section two, I really liked, the last time you touched me loving, it bruised. So there is this fear of being held by this person, because if you loved them and they hurt you, you're afraid to love them again. And then I also really liked Trojan thoughts, because something might seem great, like maybe you want to fantasize about an ex, but it brings in all the negative feelings too, because you remember the negative parts of that as well. So I'm out of time. I'll have to comment in more detail on the poem itself. Thank you, Ben. And we'll be reading more from that contest in 2 weeks at that show. And check out my contest on allpoetry.com. Thank you so much for calling, Robbie. Dan, I hope you feel better soon. And have a great night.